again, talking about how the team has worked. I've known Pete for a long time. He's a superb plantsman. He is a student of life, and Pete is always looking. He's always looking. He's always learning. And we've been so many places together, including places like Karyfurness in Pittsburgh, a National Historic Landmark that is being made into a new national park, building industrial history into a new garden of sorts. Well, these are places where spontaneity is at the heart of the ethic and the aesthetic. And Pete has increasingly played with starting a design in process, getting things started. He's got to put a plan on paper. He's got to pick the plants and the quantities, but knowing that the dynamics will begin to mature from the moment they're planted. And that instead of seeing that as a threat to his design, he sees that as part and parcel of the design intent, that the place will evolve, the patterns will be constantly in flux. And that happens so many times on the High Line, and it is happening every day. If you go up there, two seasons in a row or 2 years in a row, it will be different.
For those of us who don't live in New York City and can't visit it throughout the year, one of the things the book captures so beautifully is what it looks like through the seasons and the different ways people use it throughout the seasons and respond to it. So a couple of pictures in the book that get to this are there is a woman sort of dancing in a corner with trees all around her and grasses by her feet. And there are pictures of couples having lunch and school groups coming through and
Children touching water.
yeah. And it apparently, which I loved this description, it's the most popular meetup for gay singles. I don't know,
Grindr, yeah,
Grindr.
Robert included that in his foreword. And Robert did write the foreword for the book.
Yeah.
That was part of the discussion when we started thinking about this project, is we wanted Robert's voice there.
Right. This human response to it is also, I think, celebrated in the artwork that's included throughout the entire series of the 13 Gardens, in that there is some very sort of formal art, but then there is quite a bit of art that has been created from industrial historical elements. And I really responded to all of that. And throughout, you see this garden growing over a rail line. And so it's sort of culture on top of wildness, on top of culture. And that layering all throughout is true of the symbology as well as the plant palette.
Yeah, and what you're bringing up too is not just the flux, but the inevitability of change. And that's a core value of the High Line, a core value of Pete's work and Jim's work and Lisa's work and my work. We wanted to bring this out with different kind of testimony to it. And we quoted a man named Gaston Bachelard, who wrote a book called The Poetics of Space many, many years ago. It's been translated into multiple languages. And I was introduced to it by a cultural geography professor 40 years ago. And in that book, Bachelard says, "It is better to live in a state of impermanence than one of finality." And that kind of notion is really at the heart of the High Line. If you mentioned the art that's up there, well, one of the things that's really important is that all of that art is ephemeral. And even though I've had some incredible favorites up there and they are now gone, it's lovely to know that there will be a constant procession of art that responds to the place. And that idea of becoming comfortable with impermanence, comfortable with a flux. I mean, it's here, whether we like it or not. It's so much better to celebrate it.
How many gardeners work on it throughout the year? Do you know that?
I don't know that I could give you a number, because there are so many volunteers, there are so many students. It's a great learning place, and as we said in the book, the Friends of the Highland is running a virtual school of landscape horticulture, because they're training generations of people to do this kind of gardening. And the flux, I mean, there have been people that have been up there since the beginning. There are a number of people that come and spend a summer or a few months. And we've known a number of people that have gone on to other important positions in public horticulture and landscape who were inspired by their first experiences gardening on the High Line. I think I mentioned, that over the time, Pete, if you look at Pete's original gardens, they were about topiary. It was about fixed perennial plantings in a topiary background. And over the years, Pete has, again, because he's such a changeling and a learner, he has gone in the direction of looking at wilder places. And a lot of the traveling that we have done together as friends and colleagues has been looking at wildness, not with the idea of deliberately reprising it, but taking insights from it and finding things that could be incorporated in strategy.
So I think for people that are very moved by a formal garden, or what I think sometimes comes up for people when they even hear the word garden, the Gardens of the Highline is very naturalistic, maybe even messy and out of control looking to some of those gardeners. What would you say to them about whether or not there is order or chaos, or what would you say to them about that?
I would say there is order, and it's part of an ethical system, but let me just explore it. Most people will say chaos is a lack of order. But if you actually look up the word chaos, you'll find that it refers to a lack of predictivity. And that's more of the scientific definition. Scientists are looking to explain what's going to happen next. They do that by trying to delve into the existing order. And by understanding the order in process, they can predict the next thing that's going to occur. That's very useful in many, many different realms. Well, if you think about it, if you assume that there is no order, then you don't see order. And most humans see order in straight lines, in perfect circles, in symmetry. But a scientist or most artists are trained to see order in asymmetrical situations, mm-hmm. in things where the order is not that apparent. And the difference is they kind of go on faith that just because they can't see the order doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. This is so core to my ethical stance, because as a designer who works with a conservation ethic, I want to make sure that we're not throwing out the good stuff in the process of designing something we think is our art. And if you assume, especially in living situations, that there's always order, and if we can't see it, it's because we just haven't developed our visual acuity to the point that we can. It's not because it isn't there. So if you make the assumption there's order out there, then you take pleasure in all of the little changes. You see that the patterns, whether it's color or fragrance or seasonality that occur, they do happen with some regularity. They do happen with reason, but you have to delve a little bit more deeply. It gets into that idea of making the art of observation a life goal. It's a great pleasure, and it's free to all.
And it really does just require that we stop and take time and have a little patience and, as you say, really strive to develop our own visual acuity, because you're not going to see it if you just look once. You're going to see
it. Yeah, that's the thing. You have to revisit it. And that is what is so magical about the Highline. Not only does it change all the time in terms of moments, it changes over years. In fact, we have a final chapter in the book is called Seasons. Mm-hmm. And in it, we began by saying that most children are taught that there are only four seasons, and this is just simply wrong. There are as many seasons as the mind's eye can discern.
Exactly.
And that's, again, it's a value system. And I grew up this way. I grew up playing in an Olmsted Park in North Jersey, and my brother and I were constantly delighting in discoveries. And yes, we knew what winter and summer and spring and fall were, but there were so many tiny seasons in the landscape of that park and its living components. The Highline, even though it's a created environment, is so rich with that. And anybody that goes up there with an open eye and an open mind will make constant discoveries, and they will, as they discover, they will define season after season after season. Hardly four, so many more.
To me personally, that is what is the driving motivation and joy for gardeners, is they are in love with that fact.
Yes, it is the constant change. Mm-hmm. A long time ago, somebody said to me, if you're going to be picking a hobby or even a profession, pick something you'll never completely master. Yeah. What great advice.
Yeah. And I what mean, perfect
I think
as
I'm a
gardeners.
Fairly good gardener, but gosh, I every day what I learn is what I don't know.
That's right.
And that's what keeps it rich, and that's what keeps it alive, and that's what keeps it new.
Yeah.
This is just getting people to think.
Yeah,
this idea
and that's
that,
it.
That we too often are blind to order. And I know that, you know, Doug and I are always fighting this battle of aesthetics, because so much of what Doug really fervently wants to do is bring a lot more diversity into the landscape. And you cannot tell people that to do that, everything's going to look exactly like it does now. It's going to look a little different.
Right.
But it doesn't mean you're going to lose what you love. It just means you change a little bit.
Right. And that sort of metacognition about gardening, of stepping back and being able to see your blind spots, it's what we need to do. It's
yeah.
absolutely exactly what I am hoping to do by having these programs.
The word serendipity is very often misused. People think of serendipity as just finding something great. And serendipity is finding something great when you're looking for something else. it's the idea that the richness of a place like the Highline or any really good garden is that it is so rich with process and so rich with function that it will constantly surprise you. If you're just observant enough, it will constantly surprise you. It will constantly delight you. It is unplanned. It is a very important bit of unscripted interaction in lives that are so controlled all the time.
And I would say that's what every gardener I know will tell you when you ask them, what's your favorite thing in your garden? And they'll say, that time that this seeded there and it came up here and all of a sudden there was this thing that I just couldn't have planned. And it's the most beautiful thing, that surprise.
Yeah, it's the idea that, do you want your garden to be reliable? Absolutely. But reliably full of surprise.